Welcome to Not Artificially Sweetened, a weekly podcast where we reflect on all things diabetes. Your hosts are specialist physician Stan Landau and diabetes specialist nurse Michael Brown. We are passionate about using our talents to change lives for the better. Our mission is to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Nothing is off the table here as we discuss real people, their real issues and stories, and together discover real answers to many vexing practical issues in diabetes and its management.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to episode 45 of Not Artificially Sweetened, this free education service brought to you by the CDE Teaching and Learning Academy. Remember, if you enjoyed this podcast, give us a like and share widely on your preferred social media platform, whether that be Spotify, Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, or perhaps something a bit closer to home, such as the Listen mobile audio app. Joining me as always, Michael Brown.
Hi, Stan. It's great to be back. I've been checking us out on the Listen mobile audio app, and I'm really pleased to see us highlighted with some other great South African podcasts. And we hope that it helps our listeners to enlarge their choices of the platforms they use to join us.
Local is always lekker, as they say.
Absolutely.
Michael, we spent a few hours together on Friday mornings. We always reflect back on what's happened over the clinical course of the week in the day-to-day running of a busy diabetes clinic. Mm-hmm. And last week, we spoke about gout and we've spoken about chronic pain in the past, something we see very often, tingling in the toes, tingling in the fingertips. And it often brings a good degree of distress to the person who's sitting in front of you and relating that particular symptom. And I want to pause for a moment and just think about this, because not everything that tingles in a foot belonging to a person with diabetes is necessarily diabetes related.
Absolutely.
So we know that if your diabetes is complicated by nerve damage in the peripheral part of the body, those nerves quite far out in the toes and in the fingers, then typically it may show up with tingling, pins and needles, burning, numbness that are often felt both sides at the same time. And that's a very important clue, because if diabetes is going to affect the peripheral nerves, it's almost always what we say symmetrical and bilateral. In other words, whatever's happening in the left foot is happening simultaneously in the right foot.
Yes.
And that's very relieving for some people to know that perhaps the tingle they have in their big toe in the left may have absolutely nothing to do with diabetes, and may in fact have something to do perhaps with a lower back injury. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they've had a sports-related injury in their early years, or perhaps they have genuine lower back wear and tear as a result of disc or bone problems or even osteoporosis. And when those nerves and the spine get pinched, that electricity flows all the way down into the foot and gives rise to those classic symptoms. What's interesting about the diabetes-related nerve problems that show up is it's often worse at night. People will tell you they're in bed and they become aware that this tingling, this numbness, these pins and needles get worse at night. And that's a very important clue to share with your healthcare provider, because we have the perception that it gets worse at night because there are less distractions of the day. You know, if you were to go lie down, turn the lights off and close the curtains, you could probably feel that tingling. But one of the reasons it's often worse at night is because there are very little other distractions to keep your mind's eye alert. The lights are off, the curtains are drawn, there's not much sound coming in, and one becomes aware of your feet. And therefore, my message for people with diabetes is not to diminish or minimize these symptoms. They're important. And whilst you don't necessarily have to be anxious that it's almost always diabetes, it's worth bringing up, have your feet assessed at each and every visit. Make sure you see a podiatrist at least once a year. Those are the ways that we're able to save feet over the long haul for people with diabetes.
Absolutely, Stan. And I'd like to make a couple of points with respect to what you've just said, especially for healthcare professionals. Any diagnosis of diabetes-related neuropathy must always be a diagnosis of exclusion, as you've quite rightly said, but I just want to state that quite clearly, that you must not forget your general medicine in the treatment of diabetes, and we must first exclude any other causes of that neuropathy before we can actually turn to the person and say, look, we think this is diabetes-related. The second thing I think is important for people with diabetes is that tingling is a warning sign that the nerve is under duress, that it's suffering. It means at that stage, it's potentially reversible. And I've had a lot of people say to me, oh, my feet were burning so badly. And you know what? Thank goodness it stopped. I've got no more pain. Yes, it's great that the person doesn't have pain, but the reason they don't have pain is those nerves are no longer functioning. And that has important implications for something we talk about in foot care of diabetes, loss of protective sensation, which means that if we stand on a drawing pin, we don't feel it. Normally, your body is attuned to pick up noxious stimuli like that and to pull away and to find the cause and to rectify it. Without that warning, we are then open to injury, infection, ulceration, and the pathway to possible amputation. So a very important point you brought up there, Stan.
You know, we also see B12 deficiency.
Absolutely.
In general population, whether you're a vegetarian or a vegan, or a person who has an autoimmune condition which results in B12 deficiency. Very importantly, we've started looking at B12 levels in people who are using long-term metformin treatment.
Right.
Because we know that metformin treatment may deplete the bodily stocks of B12, and B12 deficiency may also show up. And Michael, that's a great message for us today, because coincidentally, SA Diabetes Advocacy have a message about metformin, popular and widely used medication in the treatment of type 2 diabetes. So perhaps this is an ideal time now to pause and listen to their weekly message.
Another project that SA Diabetes Advocacy will be focusing on for 2024 is long-acting metformin in the public sector. A key issue related to people living with type 2 diabetes is the common side effect of diarrhea of regular metformin. But long-acting metformin, which eliminates the side effect, isn't often available in the public sector. For those who need it, this medication can be life-saving, as it means they'll continue taking their medication. Many stop taking their medication because they feel too ill from the side effects. SA Diabetes Advocacy is currently assessing the local burden of metformin intolerance with the view of lobbying the Department of Health to allow for the use of long-acting metformin in the public sector for those that are experiencing severe side effects of regular metformin. This project is currently in the early stages of development. For more information on projects that SA Diabetes Advocacy is working on, please visit diabetesadvocacy.org.za.
Thank you again, Kirsten. That's an important project, because side effects of diabetes medications are an important reason why people stop taking their medication. And if we can mitigate these side effects, then I think we can help people to take their medication and result in life-changing effects. Stan, I wanted to bring up something important. On Sunday, we marked World Birth Defects Day, and in the South African context, the focus was on the harmful effects of fetal alcohol syndrome, a spectrum of disorders that affects women and their fetuses if they consume alcohol during pregnancy. Now, I don't know what you think, Stan, but I don't think there's any safe level of alcohol consumption during pregnancy.
Absolutely correct. It's a number one toxin in the setting of pregnancy. No good comes from alcohol consumption.
Now, unfortunately, South Africa holds the distinction of having the world's highest reported rate of fetal alcohol syndrome disorders. This is a lifelong condition, so you really are sentencing your new baby to a lifelong state of physical and mental issues in terms of their development, their learning abilities, and their behavior. And this extends beyond that individual into their families and their communities. And in the context of diabetes, I wanted to make the point that by the time many women are diagnosed as being pregnant, and that's a wonderful time for many women, many couples, it's a wonderful stage in their development where they can give rise to new life and to pass on my genes and my experience and my love to a new person. But I wanted to make the point, by the time you're diagnosed with pregnancy, you're often nearing the end of your first trimester or first third of the pregnancy. At the end of the first third of pregnancy, the first trimester, your future baby, we call it scientifically the fetus, is fully developed. Maybe tiny, only a few centimeters long, but it is a fully developed human being. From a developmental point of view, nothing else needs to happen besides growth. And the important thing is that by the end of the second week, the bunch of cells that are formed after fertilization of the ovum or the egg from the woman by the sperm from the man, the cells have already differentiated into three layers. We call them the ectoderm, that becomes the skin, the nerves of the brain, and the pigment cells in the skin. Then we have the mesoderm, or the middle layer, and that develops into your cardiac and skeletal muscle, the kidneys, the red blood cells, smooth muscle in the gut. And then finally, your endoderm, the interior layer, which develops into your lungs and your thyroid and pancreatic cells. And that's all done by the end of the second week, long, long before most women are aware that they are actually pregnant. Because all those cell layers have already been set up by the end of week two, that is when you are probably not in the best state of health if you haven't prepared, and when those cell layers can be disrupted and you end up with the birth defects that World Birth Defects Day is meaning to help us avoid. So the point of this message, pregnancy should be prepared for. And we have talked about it before, but I thought this was an amazing opportunity to reiterate something so important for our future. Because if we are getting pregnant, we're producing a new being for the future. Surely we want to make it the best possible outcome that we can. And so if you are thinking of getting pregnant, and that means long before stopping any contraception, long before being able to fall pregnant, you should be preparing for that pregnancy by stopping alcohol intake, stopping any drugs that you don't need to be taking. There's certain antihypertensive or blood pressure medications that should be swapped out at that stage, certain psychiatric medicines for depression and so on that should be swapped out. These are things that should be done long before you are able to conceive. Stan, maybe if you can just talk about that.
Well, we speak about complications of diabetes and we recognize that they take a long time to manifest, but in pregnancy, everything is condensed. So harms may occur pretty early on, as you alluded to, and therefore you could say that the complications developing in pregnancy are no less important than those developing over the long term. It's a conversation that we should be having with young women really towards the midpoint of their teenage years. The reproductive health now coming to the fore over and above mental health issues, which have come to the fore at least since the start of the COVID pandemic. It comes down to preparation or deliberate organization, as we've spoken about on this podcast before. The best endings have the best dedicated, deliberate beginnings.
Absolutely. So time to bring in our studio guest. I'm really looking forward to his stories, Dan.
Me too.
So let's welcome into the studio Lytle Johnson. He's a consultant industrial engineer from Sunninghill, and he's currently working on some exciting automotive projects. He's an outdoor guy. He spends his weekends driving all over South Africa to race enduro. And you can tell us what that means, Lytle, just now. He also watches his fiance compete in horse riding. He sails. He gets out of the city to do some DIY projects. I'd love to hear a bit about that. And he enjoys training every day after work and then finishes off the evening by cooking some exciting meals. Both Stan and I are avid cooks, so I think that's a passion that we share. And he's got some amazing friends who've remained a big part of his life from his years of study in Pretoria. And looking ahead, Lytle is really keen on gaining some podium positions in dirt bike racing this year. And big on his cards is a podium place in this year's Roof of Africa in Lesotho. He's hoping to land some sponsors that will help him to achieve much more in his chosen sport. So Lytle, welcome to our podcast. We're looking forward to your input. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Stan. I'm fortunate enough to work as a consultant, so you get to meet loads of people. You all over the country, you get to see manufacturing sectors from our FMCG, which is our fast-moving consumer goods. And then also this year, I've started some automotive clients. I think the scale of production that you get to see is honestly unreal. It's always nice because I think quite often I look at the South African manufacturing and sometimes you don't always get to see these big players.
Mm.
And now over the last year, I've had an amazing opportunity to literally work with the guys that are producing automotive parts for big, big companies. And I mean, the very products that I'm working with these guys on, you get to see it on the road every day. So that makes my job, I think, very fulfilling and very exciting, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think we've got to recognize that the automotive manufacturing industry is a significant contributor to our gross domestic product in South Africa and a significant source of our export revenue. So, as you say, great to see those products on the road and then hopefully leaving our beleaguered harbors.
Yeah, definitely. That's the thing is, even if we do make it, yeah, we just hope that it's a smooth process all the way through, which most of the time, I think it definitely is starting to improve now.
Great.
Lytle, we've invited you on because you've got some fascinating stories to share with us, whether it be in the professional realm and your extracurricular activities, or as Michael alluded to earlier, in the kitchen. What's your diabetes journey? We typically ask this of all our guests who join us, and I think your story is particularly interesting.
For me, looking back, I got diagnosed in September 2022. So I've been living with diabetes for almost 2 years now. And it's quite a funny story. I actually went to a wine tasting. I was out with some friends having an amazing time. And the next day I felt particularly bad. And I thought, oh, it's a hangover. You know, maybe I haven't been out like this for a while. Maybe it's just a big shock. It's nothing too scary. And then my fiance's sister actually said to me, oh, please, can I check your sugar? So I was like, okay, let's see. Let's just see what effects this alcohol's had on my body. Am I still in range? Am I fine? before this, I had no history in my family of diabetes. And then my glucose reading came back, I think it was about over 18. And at the time, I actually didn't really know what that meant. So at first it was kind of, oh, okay, awesome, cool. And then her mother actually has been managing, I think, a bit of pre-diabetes and been quite proactive with it. So she was quite alarmed and said, maybe you take this device, I'll buy a new one. You check on it and see how you go this week. So I went back. I was just normal. I mean, I think with the engineering background, I love to build data, track things, see how the trend is. Mm-hmm. So I kept testing and checking my sugar as I would go through my week. And after dinner, I would find that I was spiking to about 27, 26. And I mean, for me, it didn't really mean anything. I felt great. I felt normal with life. I was maybe getting a flu or a cold every 2 months. That's the only thing that was concerning me. But other than that, it wasn't a big concern. So I phoned a friend of mine that's a doctor and I spoke to her about it. And she said to me, no, Lytle, I think go start off by seeing your house GP, chat to her, see if she can refer you, see what's the plan. And yeah, from there, it's been quite a exciting and a very interesting journey that I've been through. And I think one of the biggest things I noticed is obviously at first it was a massive shock. For me, I started experiencing that stigma that comes with diabetes like very quickly. And it was a world that I'd never really been involved in and never knew too much about. So that was quite a shock. And then going forward with that, it's also, I think, very hard to find accurate information because there's a big overshare with people on experiences that don't necessarily relate to you. Those things almost put you in like a state of shock because it's not your diagnosis or your life that's ahead of you, but yet people very openly share these experiences. So that was, I think, quite scary at first. Over the next almost 2 years now, it's been a difficult thing to deal with. But at the same token, my actual quality of life has significantly improved, which I think most people are shocked to hear when I say that.
Tell us about that. That's an interesting statement.
Yeah. So when I'm competing in enduro, I was competing before and I was riding and racing. So every weekend you're out in, I mean, we're lucky enough to have this hot sun in South Africa. But at the same token, when you've got 10 kilos of motocross kit on you and you're out in the beautiful Michalisburg Mountains racing on your enduro bike, you can get up to 38 degrees in the low-lying areas. Mm. And dealing with this extreme heat, extreme dehydration, and it's also fatigue on your body. In a race, you can burn up to 3,500 calories. So it takes a big toll on your body. And initially what was happening is after my race, I would get home and I would have this horrible headache. I would basically start to struggle with my vision because of how bad the headache was and the heat stroke. And I thought, oh, I just need to train harder. It will get better. I just need to train harder. So I kept thinking, is this really worth? I mean, I've dreamt my whole life to one day be able to compete and just be out there enjoying like the nature on my motocross bike. And I was thinking, is this really worth what I'm putting myself through every weekend? And eventually, after starting to use insulin and checking my glucose levels, it wasn't an immediate change, but I started noticing quite a lot of improvements. After my races, I would be chatty and walking around with everyone. I could straight away start getting rehydrated and just enjoying after. I mean, when you compete any race, it doesn't matter what sport it's in. You get that like overwhelming sensation. I think it's all the endorphins in that. And it's this excitement and accomplishment. And when you're unable to enjoy that, it's devastating. And for the first time, I was able to complete this, get this excitement, this feeling of achievement, and then just enjoy it.
Absolutely. Mm.
Be with my fiance, be with my friends, chat about the day, chat about where we're riding. Because I mean, some of the places we ride here, we're so fortunate to ride. 2 weekends ago, I was competing in Limpopo and you're racing on a private game farm and you're in the mountains. It's so, so remote. It's all uncharted land. There's been no vehicles up there. Essentially, you're riding your motocross bike on a hiking trail that's been freshly cut just for the race. Mm. So it's honestly amazing. And I think through, even though most days it's quite tough to just keep my diabetes under control and working with it going forward. But I think the nice thing is through managing it, I've started seeing a big increase in just overall life. And I think everything has started improving on that side. It's so nice to be able to have the tools to monitor it and to keep it in check. And I think that's been great for me.
It's so interesting that you talk about this stigma early on with diabetes. And I'm just wondering if we can explore that a little bit. Were you diagnosed immediately as a person with type 1 diabetes, a person with type 2 diabetes? We often see people coming in if they're not in large bodies and said, oh, you can't possibly have diabetes. You're not large enough. You're not fat enough. You're not obese. And that stigma persists right the way through. And then the language gets used like, well, you're lucky yours isn't so bad. It's only mild. It's not chronic. It's a little bit of diabetes. You know, my uncle had diabetes and he lost his legs. So watch it. What's your experience in that setting?
So Stan, it's so funny that you say that because my doctor, she said, you know, I don't want to just give you a diagnosis. I'm not actually sure if you're type one or if you're type two. The evidence is leaning towards type one. She's saying, based on what I'm seeing, based on the checks we've done, but I would like you to go and see an endocrinologist. So I thought, okay, great. That's a very big word. Let's try and find one and see where I can go. So she referred me. And I remember getting there on the first day and it was like, someone actually asked me, what are you here for? So I said, no, I'm probably diabetic. And they were like, okay, that's unusual.
Lytle, let's stop you there. Just for our listeners' information, Lytle would be quite at home on the cover of GQ. He's a good-looking guy.
Thank you.
No, really, he's a good-looking guy. Let's be frank. And you don't fit any perceived stereotype of what diabetes may look like. And for any doctor, if you see someone like Lytle, don't think type 2 diabetes, please. Carry on.
And that's, I think, for me, it was the shock, as if to say to me, so you don't fit the general image. So it's a misdiagnosis or...
So we don't know what to do with you.
We don't know what you're doing here. You shouldn't be here. At the time, I just joined onto a new medical aid and I was buying a lot of the products, just cash out the pocket. And whenever I was buying these products, the weird thing is I only found out later from a friend of mine that said to me, no, they probably think you're using insulin for bodybuilding or gymming. This was like the first time I had heard of this. And I thought, what? Why would anybody be doing this to themselves? Yeah, so that actually made a lot of sense because initially some of the pharmacists I would see would look at me and almost judge me and say to me, what are you using this for? Who's referred you here? I was so shocked and I thought, I'm dealing with this diabetes diagnosis. Everything's very new to me. Do you always go through so much scrutiny when you're just getting your monthly prescriptions? And only later on, I realized that there's actually another whole stigma with that. Never mind the appearance of a person or their capabilities and that.
Right.
And then later on, I had to enter for a new race that I was doing. I was very new to the sport, but I had a good year's experience of competing every month. So I was starting to get a good taste and a feel of how things worked in the sport. And I sent through my application. I thought, no, let's be diligent. Let's disclose to them that I've newly been diagnosed with type 1. And straight away, my entry was pulled from the event. I couldn't compete. Yeah. They told me, no, we're not going to allow you to compete with type 1. And I mean, this is something I've been working towards for many years to be able to compete in the sport. Mm. It's a massive passion of mine. And I was so angry and I was outraged. I was like, who is this person to tell me, are you a specialist endocrinologist? Maybe I didn't handle it the best, but I was just so upset about it. It was that back and forth email chain of, who are you to tell me I'm a fit, healthy person and there's no complications with my type 1? And even if there are, I haven't had any reason that would prevent me from competing in the sport safely. So fortunately enough, I was able after that to... The event was coming up within, I think it was 2 weeks from that date. I mean, all the training that I put into the sport, I'm normally at the gym Monday to Friday training so that I can compete. And all of that felt like it was just dissolving away. I was never going to be able to do this. Sure. And fortunately enough, I was able to see a specialist physician. It was actually Dr. Stan Lander. The conversation I first had with Dr. Stan, I was actually dreading the appointment at first because I was thinking, I've been to other doctors, I've been to other specialists. I think you walk in there, you just get the dread and walk out and you feel terrible and you think, oh, this is already hard enough. After this opinion, it's just made it even worse. I still remember the first thing Dr. Stan said to me was, hi, how are you doing? And I was like, okay, that's a great start.
Thank you.
Yes, I am actually a person. Let's carry on. And I left that day thinking, you know what? I don't have this perfectly under control, but I'm going to manage it and just keep moving forward with it. And yeah, and that was awesome.
Good. Thank you for that feedback.
Pleasure. And while I was at Dr. Stan, he checked through all my vitals and everything, was able to write a letter, and I sent it through to the organization. And it was almost like, oh, okay, we'll let you do this. You can go ahead now. There was no sorry for the way we treated you or anything. It was just like, okay, well, you've got your way with this now. So just go do what you want. I was honestly so shocked about it because I've already heard of other guys that I know that are also competing in similar sports that are also managing type 1 diabetes in the sport. And these guys, they put so much effort and time into keeping healthy, managing their diabetes so that they can compete in their passion. And for the first time, it just hit me that, like, is this actually going to limit me going forward in the things that I love and want to do? It's quite hard, I think, to deal with that realization that you're going through. And after that, I think it kind of lit the fire for me. And I said, okay, cool. You know what? I'm going to keep competing in the Pro B class. My goal is to get some podiums. And since then, I've just kept pushing on it. And 2 weeks ago, I was fortunate enough to meet that goal and actually get a podium in the Pro B class.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that was a massive moment for me.
Michael, two thoughts here. One, a comment, and the other, a challenge. You know, if we had to have a motto that ends off today's session, it would be people with diabetes can.
For sure.
And you fill in the end of that sentence because, you know, we've had pilots, we have enduros, we have extreme athletes, and we have the everyday person who gets on and can manage their diabetes in the face of perhaps less food security or perhaps job insecurity, and they can and are going ahead with that. And therefore, the challenge is this. If you're a person who is promoting or propagating prejudice against people with diabetes, well, we're calling you out for that.
Yes.
Because it's no longer appropriate. If you run a scuba diving school and are telling people who come and want to undertake a leisure activity that they have diabetes and can't, pause for a moment, ask them to produce a medical certificate as to why they can't. If you're in arterial science and are prejudicing people with well-managed diabetes over a lengthy period of time and are denying them affordable life and disability cover, that's also inappropriate. These mentalities go back to the 1940s and 50s, where death and destruction from diabetes perhaps was an inevitability in those years, where treatments were unsophisticated and crude. We didn't have knowledge. We didn't have access to tech. But in the modern day, it's inappropriate and it's really revolting. And again, kudos to SA Diabetes Advocacy, who are promoting this kind of appropriate management of people with diabetes in the workplace, at leisure, and all around our country. And I think that's great.
Well said, Stan. I couldn't agree more. We have moved on. If you didn't realize, listeners who are in positions of such power, it's 2024, and we actually do know how to manage diabetes to a point where a person with diabetes can essentially do anything they would like to do. So please, let's help them. Lytle, I've been watching you as you speak. You've got this constant, almost smile on your face. You seem to exude a huge sense of optimism. And a word that comes up often in your speech and in your writing is exciting. Tell us how important optimism is and that can do sense of self in approaching your diabetes and, of course, your life dreams.
Looking ahead at the future, coming from the engineering field and that, there's a lot of excitement to the new advances, the technology that's been released. And it's almost as if every time I look at the new products that are being released for something simple as glucose monitoring strips, when I found out that every test that you do, this is a funny little story. When I first started checking my sugar levels, what I didn't actually realize is that it's all recorded and then it would sync over to your phone on Bluetooth. So I would over monitor, if that's a thing. And throughout the day, I just wanted to know, okay, cool. I feel like this. Okay, this is the range I'm in. Am I in range? Am I out of range? And throughout the day, I would just keep doing that. And about a month after that, I went back and I saw my specialist nurse and she said to me, Lytle, how many times are you monitoring your glucose levels a day? So I said to her, I do about maybe 15 to 20 a day.
Wow.
And she was shocked. And she said to me, I just want to see your fingertips quickly. And I showed her my fingertips and she said, okay, I don't want to say to you, don't over monitor, but I think you might be putting yourself through a bit too much scrutiny on keeping in the range. I understand it's very new and everything, but she said to me, I really want you to try this new device. And I was fortunate enough to use one of those. I think it was the Freestyle Libre ones where it's literally this tiny little unit. You clip it on your side, pop it in, it works, and you just go on your way. And then you take out your phone and you just tag it and it shows you your reading.
So we're talking about continuous glucose monitoring.
Yes, that's the right word for it. So one of those devices I was using. And for me, I could not believe how amazing this thing was.
Life changing.
Yeah. And so my sister-in-law studied biomedical and she's a electrical engineer. And my brother's a mechanical engineer. So when I went through to them, they were like, oh, please, can we see this? I don't want to be rude or anything, but do you mind? Please, can we check this out? The three of us literally sat there geeking over this, thinking, this is amazing. Like the fact that we've moved forward so much that you can literally just take out your phone anywhere, just scan it, check it. And then from there, 2 weeks later, I was competing in Matatiele and I was doing a race from Matatiele to Port Edward. And it was a 3-day enduro race. And there I went with this brand new device. It was so cool that while I was riding my bike, I could stop, take my phone out, quickly tag it, see what my reading was. And then that would literally be sent to my brother, my fiance, and everyone knew exactly where I was, if I was in range, how I was doing. For me, this was so, so cool to be able to use something like this. When I look at that and seeing how far we've come, I'm so optimistic and excited for the things, the changes that we're going to see over the next couple of years and what lies ahead in the future.
Wonderful.
I understand a lot of the clinical trials do take quite long because they just want to make sure it's safe. But I still think in my lifetime, definitely, I'm so excited for what's going to come out. And even with the current things we already have, they are so amazing and they just, they make your day-to-day life so much more easy. And even for me, when I'm in the gym after work, chatting to some people, they would always come up to me and say, what is that? And I would be like, oh no, it actually monitors my glucose levels. And just to see the people's reaction, they are shocked. They're like, so you're telling me that thing literally gives you a reading all day to tell you what your glucose levels is? So I said, yeah, it works like that. It's honestly a difficult thing to manage and work with, but the tools that have come out have been so amazing. And yeah, I can't express how exciting it is to see these new advances in science going ahead.
Just this week, the FDA has approved an over-the-counter CGM purchase, and people who are using it perhaps as part of a broader glucose awareness or perhaps endurance training, or perhaps they are people with so-called pre-diabetes or people with diabetes, will need to overcome fewer hurdles now, at least in the US, in order to attain their continuous glucose monitoring component. So that's very exciting. Kind of a greater democratization of this tech, which we know in our country still remains pretty, pretty expensive.
Yes.
And I've often said that these tools aren't good for the management of diabetes. I've said that they enable people to make their diabetes management more efficient, and therefore the outcomes are very much better. How often we've had people with diabetes who've used new tech and just aren't acting on that data or aren't making modifications as a result of that. And you've brought in a couple of points there, Lytle. You've said specialist nurse education. You've said use of tech. You've said acting on that data and continuing to live as near normal a life as possible, whether it be on the roof of Africa or in the gym. And just very quickly, a little vignette here. When our medical center had a gym downstairs, you would often come across a person who'd say, ah, doc, you know, the pharmacy need another script. They keep telling me my insulin is up. And we said, well, how's that possible? You're getting 5 insulin pens a month. And here you are halfway through the month and you're asking for another script. And it worked out that there were a handful of people who were having their insulin bought by the bodybuilding community that were also sharing the gym space. And we know that these guys and ladies, dare I say, who were using insulin treatment as part of their own bodybuilding, and they were having to eat to fuel themselves to reduce the risk of hypoglycemia. And in that way, we were able to ascertain that this was a side hustle for a couple of patients that we were looking after. You know, just a message out there to the community is that insulin is also a hormone of abuse if it arrives in the wrong hands.
Lytle, following on your discussion of your excitement in your general personality, have you been involved in any diabetes advocacy? Because if not, I think you are potentially a great face and voice for diabetes advocacy in South Africa.
So unfortunately, I haven't. Fortunately, today is probably the first bit of advocacy I've ever done for diabetes. And I think going ahead, I definitely would like to get involved in something more towards advocacy for diabetes, because something that I've noticed now is it's amazing how many people are willing to come up to me and say, oh, does that give you the range of your glucose levels? Oh, please, can I try it? And then I'm like, okay, let me change all the needles. He has a new strip. And it's shocking how many people really just want to know what their glucose levels are. And every opportunity I have like that with that interaction with people, I always then tell them a little bit more. I try and share as much knowledge as I have and on my personal experience and just say, yeah, this is what I've been diagnosed with. This is what I manage. This is how I do it. And I say to them, you know, from what I've seen, you appear to be in a normal range, but definitely check it out with your doctor, because you actually never know. For many years, my sugar possibly could have been all over the place, but I just never actually knew. And I think it literally takes something so small as meeting with someone, having a quick reading on what your glucose levels are at, and it could possibly prevent other health issues occurring from that. Working as a consultant, I spend so much time with people, chatting with people, hearing their stories, trying to understand what they do in their work. And it's definitely something I look forward to in the future, is that I will and would like to be more involved in the advocacy for diabetes.
Right. So SA Diabetes Advocacy, I hope you are listening. Here is an ideal candidate. We are coming close to the end of the show, but I wanted to ask about your passion for cooking and how have you been able to maintain the joy of eating and of food preparation, you know, in the context of what people often misconstrue as a very ascetic lifestyle?
For me, the first thing was, I'm one of those guys where it's all in or nothing. I like to really commit into something. And I said to myself, for the rest of your life, potentially you're going to have to cook dinner for yourself. So enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if I can enjoy half an hour to an hour of my day, every day cooking dinner, that's already a great start. So I got a routine. I would come home, put some cooking shows on, get in the kitchen, open up the balcony doors, just enjoy the sunset, and then try and cook something exciting. So
wonderful.
Sometimes I'm cooking Indonesian food. Sometimes it might be some traditional South African food. And I've noticed definitely with my, and this is for me personally, what I've noticed is certain things that I cook obviously have certain effects on my glucose range.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, as long as I pretty much balance what I'm cooking with how much insulin I give myself, it almost goes hand in hand. I can have most meals with the right amount of insulin and you move on and it's no problem. And then there's some meals that I learn from and the physical activity. So that throws another spanner in the works. I find for myself, I need to manage my fitness levels with what I'm eating, with the amount of insulin.
Yes.
I mean, that's something I just keep learning every week. And then sometimes I might stumble across something that might throw me out of range a little bit too much. And I decide, well, let's explore other options. Maybe today I might use this rather. And you do the same meal, but you put something different in. And then I end up finding, from my biggest food critic, my fiance would say to me, oh, this is really good. And I'm like, really? You really like this? Okay, awesome. And then we move forward. So we've had some very exciting meals. But the only thing I will say is, when you an experimental cook in the kitchen, just as many amazing meals you have just as many bad meals because it goes either way. Yeah.
Well, that's part of learning.
Michael, for me, the greatest take-home learning for this week is exactly what Lautner's just said there. He said, and this works for me. And it was trial and error, too much salt, too little pepper, and so on, to use the cooking analogy. And that's so important for our listeners, whether they be people with diabetes, people caring for people with diabetes, or a healthcare professional. There isn't a cookie cutter approach in the modern day management of diabetes, whether it come to medication, whether it be nutrition, structured physical activity, what works for you. And if you can share that and have your voice heard in the consultation with your healthcare provider, it makes it so much more valuable to construct a care plan together with you, side by side, and not relying on the healthcare practitioner to give you outdated, inappropriate guidance. Lautner, it's been absolutely great having you. You are energized, you are positive, you are optimistic, whether it be in your diabetes management, your professional sphere, the off-road that you do, or whether it be in the kitchen, something that is close to my heart too. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope your health remains robust and you remain really at the roof of everything that you're doing at this point in time, navigating those kind of troublesome peaks from time to time, but really with great aplomb and really inspirational having you in session with us today. Listeners, I'm going to sign out now, and I look forward to you joining us at our next session.
Great. Thank you, Stan. Lytle, this has been an amazing show for me as a partaker in the show. You are inspirational.
No, thanks, sir.
I have enjoyed your sense of optimism and excitement. It is infectious, and I can see that you are someone who takes their work life, their play life, and their self-management of diabetes extremely seriously and conscientiously. And it's wonderful to see such a young person coming to the fore. And I think you're going to be a great leader in years to come in many fields of life. So thank you for joining us.
No, thank you so much, Michael. And thanks, Stan, for having me on the show. It's definitely been an awesome opportunity today to just meet and chat with you guys.
Please keep us up to date with your podiums. We'd like to announce that on the show.
I will do, definitely.
Great. Listeners, thank you so much for giving us your time. We appreciate it. If you have any questions, queries, or comments, please contact us at podcast@cdediabetes.co.za, and we'll catch you again next week. We look forward to it. Over and out from us. Thank you for joining us on Not Artificially Sweetened. where we aim to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Anything we discuss is for your reflection, education, personal growth, and entertainment only. You join this podcast at your own risk, and we are not responsible for any omissions, errors, or unwanted medical outcomes. Please note the following important, specific disclaimers. For people with diabetes, the health professionals on this podcast are not your personal caregivers. Always discuss any new information with your diabetes team before acting on any aspect of it. The views and opinions discussed are those of the hosts only and do not represent those of any other entity. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you encounter in this session. Anything you learn or experience here cannot substitute for personalized, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For health professionals working in diabetes, always discuss any new information with your clinical team before acting on any aspect of it. You are personally accountable and liable for any choices made in a clinical setting according to your level of training and legal scope of practice. Any information or insights gained here must be used with your professional discretion and with the developing base of clinical evidence, local and organizational laws, regulations, guidelines, and protocols. Good luck with your diabetes care missions. Till next time.